Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Gareth Greenaway joins me. We're going to talk about ZoneMinder, the thing that watches your webcam so you don't have to. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Gareth Greenaway. Episode 266, recorded September 25th, 2013. ZoneMinder. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week, or as often as I can, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day, projects you might not have ever heard of, but now want to start using, like I see so many times in the show. Without exception, or well, with almost no exception, I have a co-host this week again. It's Gareth Greenaway. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Randall. Happy to be the exception.
No, I mean, the exception is sometimes I don't have a co-host if I do like a solo interview or something, but that's been pretty rare. So mostly I like having co-hosts because that means we can kind of have a little bit of banter back and forth at the beginning of the show and the end of the show like we do here. Where are we speaking to you from? You're almost a stone's throw away from me, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm still in Thousand Oaks, which I think is an hour, well, not hour driving because there's no way you can get anywhere in L.A. by car in an hour.
Right.
But as the crow flies, as I said last time, about an hour or so from LA.
Very good. Very good. Well, it's nice to have you back on the show. Let's see. We have a great guest today. We have Kyle Johnson. That's actually one name I could probably pronounce without having to ask the guest for a change. Kyle Johnson is going to come talk to us about ZoneMinder. And from what I can see in the description, ZoneMinder is a whole suite of tools to be used to monitor webcams, including recording them, alerting when things happen, like somebody crosses through part of a path or something like that. And it's been around for quite a long time. It's been a long project. What do you know about ZoneMinder so far?
I had played around with it a few years ago. I haven't used it recently, but yeah, I mean, for what I could tell, it was an open source project designed around security cameras. And in a lot of ways, it rivaled a lot of the even when I played with it a few years ago, it rivaled a lot of the big kind of commercial security systems. It would let you use basically off the shelf webcams, netcams. To accomplish like security systems. So yeah, very, very cool project.
Well, here we go. Let's go ahead and bring on Kyle Johnson, our guest. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And where are you speaking to us from?
I am in Baltimore, Maryland, actually on the East Coast.
Cool. And I have to announce, because you told us this before the show, that you're in a somewhat noisy environment, so occasionally we'll hear a little bit of background noise as you're speaking, but I'm sure we work around that, not a big problem. So I gave sort of the overview of ZoneMinder at the beginning of the show, which you just heard. Why don't you give us a 30,000-foot view and fill in anything that I left out?
Yeah, you did a pretty good job, actually, in your podcast last week when you closed off with the description of ZoneMinder. You did it very well. It's basically an open source suite of software that is used to connect to and monitor cameras, and you can set up alerts and all kinds of things to find zones of detection of interest. Runs on a LAMP stack, the back end anyway. The front is in PHP, and that's where you do all the administration from. But it works with open off-the-shelf hardware, many cameras, IP cameras, USB cameras. You can set up most Android phones to talk to ZoneMinder as well.
And how did the project get started? What problem was it trying to solve?
So, it's a pretty long story. I've been involved more recently. The project started a long time ago when the lead developer, Phil, had his shed broken into and some tools stolen. So, I guess at the time there wasn't anything else. So, he wrote his own, you know, software, which turned into ZoneMinder.
Oh, okay. You said long story, and then that was a short story. Okay. So the first use of this was as a security minder for someone who, well, Phil, who obviously had a problem with that. Now, how did it develop from there? How did it start attracting a community of developers, and what time frame was that in?
I'm not too concrete on the time frame, but my understanding is from the beginning, he kept it open. He released it as an open source project pretty early on. So, you know, not only he had access to it.
Okay. And then, so how did you get involved?
So I started using it a couple years back as a user. I had set up some cameras around my house, actually. I lived in a not-so-great neighborhood, and I actually caught a guy stealing a TV once. But I was a user, long-time user. And then at a couple of my jobs, I actually used ZoneMinder, one for general surveillance, and then I used another one to set up kind of a red light traffic system, which was actually integrated with ZoneMinder. And then more recently, I started working on a new front end for it. That was actually about 2 years ago. And then even more recently, about 6 months ago, I contacted the lead developer to see if I could take on the lead role and move the stuff over to GitHub and just open the project up because it wasn't very active.
And so did he have a lot of people? It sounded like he didn't have a lot of people helping him with it. So it was sort of a one-man project for a long time?
It was, as far as I know, a one-man project until about 6 months ago when I took it over. It was hosted on his own hardware. Well, some of it on his own hardware in his house. The SVN repo was very closed. No bug tracking, communication through the forums. And there wasn't a release in about 2 years. So most of the main users hang out in the IRC channel. And we started talking about forking. And I said, hold on, let me talk to the main guy and see if, you know, he'll let me take it over. That'll be much cleaner. So he was on board. I moved the code over to GitHub, kind of got a, you know, commit workflow, branching workflow going on. And we just started pulling in a lot of the community patches that had been submitted over the years.
And do you have a sense of how many users there were at that point? Obviously, you were one, but do you have any sense of like how many other people had downloaded and been using it on a regular basis?
You know, unfortunately, we don't have any way of tracking that.
Okay.
We don't have any kind of download counter, and I mean, it's pretty widely received and talked about, but I really don't have a good estimate of the number of people that are using it.
Okay, and what sort of things might compete with this?
Well, in the closed source world, there seems to be a lot of things. You know, there's many, many, you know, commercial systems that can do this job. Maybe not as well, and definitely more expensive. In the open source world, I don't know of any. You know, I'm probably not tracking that as well as I should be. But, you know, a lot of IP cameras come with built-in motion detection. And then you can alert on that. But it's pretty poor generally, not very reliable. And you probably want something pretty reliable if you're setting up a security system. But there's tons of open or sorry, closed source off-the-shelf systems that you can buy and set up.
So let's talk
but
about...
really this is...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, so let's talk about then what's the typical interface flow for this? What am I seeing as I'm installing this? What am I seeing in order to have it start doing things for me? What sort of range of configurations do I have? Walk me through that.
Sure. So LAMP backend, so Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP backend. To get started, you can either install from a package or from source. Because we didn't have a release in so many years, the packages were pretty out of date. But we now have a developer maintaining a current package. So you could install the package on your Linux server. We're also working on FreeBSD support, which is coming pretty close. Or you can compile from source. That way you get, you know, the newest stuff. You know, the source compile takes a while. Sometimes you need to compile FFmpeg, and that takes even longer. But after that point, after the initial compilation installation, if you set up the database, you know, you can do that relatively quickly. I've also written a Puppet install module to get you up and running pretty quick. It does all the compilation from source steps for you. So not as quick as a package, but it gets you the latest, greatest. Afterwards, you'll have a, depending where you set it up, maybe on localhost, maybe on another box on your network, a page you can browse to in your web browser. And from there, you can add monitors. For each monitor, you can define detection zones. As events are triggered, you can view the events. You could have them email you. That's the gist of it.
Okay, so and just give me the details about what this detection zone is.
Sure. So each camera... by default, the detection zone is everything it sees. Mm-hmm. But that's not always what you care about. You might only, you know, care about the door frame or the driveway or the street. So, for example, at my house, I have a camera on the front door that points out into the street. It covers my my steps, my driveway, and the street. I don't really care about cars driving by, so I define a zone within the monitor's field of view that says ignore the street. And then I don't draw a zone inside the driveway that says I care about this area, so alert me. And then another one on my steps. So you can break it out that way to say I don't care about everything in this zone that I'm looking at to cut down on false positives. And then the more accurately you define your zone, it can more accurately say, you know, hey, you've got action at the front steps or action at the driveway, all coming from the same camera.
Oh, that's great. And how do you draw that? Is that you do using using mouse to draw lines and zones on the screen?
Pretty close, actually.
Wow.
The way it works currently is when you open up the zone page for a given monitor, you're presented with a snapshot of that monitor, and then you kind of drag boxes around to define detection zones. It's actually pretty standard in a lot of the cameras you buy off the shelf that have built-in motion support.
Mm-hmm.
And then you basically define zones within a zone.
Okay. And so now I've got cameras being monitored. I've got zones. I can set different triggers on. What's the sort of thing I can trigger on, and what can I have it do as a result of that?
Sure. So each zone is pretty configurable as far as motion is considered. In reality, it detects motion based on a composite of previous images.
Mm-hmm.
So motion is, you know, the difference between two or many more images. And you can define some zones be very picky about and some not so much. You know, you might not care about the leaves moving in the shadow on the ground. To the monitor, that's motion.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it detects motion. You can also hook it up with numerous triggers. You can send data to a listening port and tell it which monitor to trigger for how long and which messages to append to that event. And then with that, you can link monitors together. And you can also tie in X10 devices and, you know, do other smart things around the house.
Okay. And then can I also trigger, like, starting a recording or continuing a recording or something like that?
Well, by default, I skipped one step. Didn't think it relevant at the time. But now every monitor you add has a function. A function can be a continuous recording where you don't even have to define a zone because it will record continuously. Detection, where, you know, you define your zones. So if you define a detection monitor, anytime motion is detected, an event is recorded, and it records for the duration of that event. Otherwise, it records continuously and, you know, cuts that up into pre-configurable chunks.
Okay. Does it have the capability of, like only keeping, like, the last 48 hours of recording so you don't run out of disk space, or is that something that has to be done externally?
So the current zone minder has what's called filters. Mm-hmm. You define filters to either search for events or to search for events and, you know, delete them, for example. So ZoneMinder comes with one predefined filter, which is delete from disk when at 95% full. And it basically does that because people run out of space. You enable this filter, and then whenever the filter runs, if you're at the threshold, it will delete the defined amount of events, the oldest first.
So if someone wants to get started with ZoneMinder today, like what kind of hardware would they be looking at in terms of like a server to kind of capture the video?
Sure. So that depends on a number of things. Technically, it depends on the type of stream you're monitoring because some require more horsepower to decode or transcode. It depends on the color depth of the image and the frames per second. That all calculates into, you know, how much work the CPU has to do to decode the images and compare them. That being said, you could probably take your desktop, your laptop, something pretty small. I think we even have people running it on like Raspberry Pis or something. I forget those details, but it doesn't take much to get started. If you can run MySQL and PHP, you can probably run ZoneMinder. You just have to take care to limit your cameras to a smaller amount of frames per second, so it doesn't have to do as much work.
What's typically the most important resource when dealing with this? Is it memory? Is it disk speed or processor?
That's really going to depend on, I guess, your deployment scenario. But as far as doing the analysis of images, it's definitely CPU bound, depending on the stream type as well. And then storage. You know, if you want to keep a month's worth of events, you're going to need a lot of storage. Depends on what you're using it for.
Okay. What kind of cameras do you typically recommend for someone just getting started?
Works with just about any camera. With that said, any camera that says it requires Microsoft or Internet Explorer or ActiveX basically won't work. With that said, there's a whole wide range of cameras, basically any IP camera, because they can do JPEG or MJPEG or, you know, a number of different streams will work. I've used VivoTech, I've used Axis, D-Link. There's a whole wide range of cameras that work. Chances are if you find one, it'll work. And even further, any USB camera or analog camera that supports video for Linux 2 will work with a ZoneMinder.
Okay. Going back to what Randall was saying about his question about the community, how has the community grown? How has it changed since you've taken over the project?
We've had an amazing amount of interest since I moved it over to GitHub and kind of opened it up. Previously, the only real forum for discussion was the forum. People would report bugs. They wouldn't really get tracked or any movement or interest. There was a lot of community work regarding patches and performance improvements, those things. And, you know, people could maybe find them on the forums and maybe apply them, but they never got applied upstream. Since moving over to GitHub, we have something like 39 forks of the project where people are submitting pull requests almost daily with improvements for the code. We have a whole bunch of people fixing bugs and issues. We have a real issue tracker now. But almost daily, we're having community involvement. It's really exciting.
No, that's great. What's the most interesting kind of feature that you've seen someone add based now that you've taken over the project based on those forks?
It's interesting. A couple years back, I used ZoneMinder while building a red light traffic system that I had trigger ZoneMinder to record when someone ran the light. And, you know, I was like, I would like to do a license plate recognition. But one of our users is working on a plugin architecture with two plugins already, facial recognition and license plate recognition. So those are probably going to be in the 2.0 release, a little further away. But that's pretty cool that we're starting to get plugins.
Have you seen anyone, I don't know if this is like going back to when the project started or even just recently, has anyone done any, taken like the ZoneMinder code and done any like sort of commercial products with it?
They have, and I actually just learned about one or two of them recently. Can't remember the names. But one of the users in the IRC channel sent me this link. I was looking for I'm rewriting the front end right now, and I was looking for some ideas on, you know, the way other people are handling it. So he sent me this link, and I was like, yeah, that looks pretty good, but, you know, it's only as good as what's underneath. And he's like, oh, by the way, it's running ZoneMinder underneath. It's just reskinned. So I was like, oh, look at me. but, yeah, there's definitely at least a couple, three or four commercial projects that are running ZoneMinder underneath.
And what is the license of ZoneMinder currently? What license is it released under?
It's GPL.
Okay. So those commercial products, anything that they change, are they pretty good about contributing their changes back into the project?
At least not as far as I know. I actually don't know how they're handling that. And there's never been anybody to kind of, you know, ping them for it.
Okay.
What is the most...
Go ahead. No, sorry.
With that said, I know at least one of the projects started with Zomi underneath and then did a complete rewrite. So I don't know how much they're doing aside from the front-end work. But anyway, go ahead.
I was just going to ask what the when I asked about the most interesting feature, so my follow-up question to that was, what is the most interesting use case that you've seen of someone using ZoneMinder?
Well, I mean, most people just use it for, you know, what it's made for. Other people use it for nanny cams. I used it to build a commercial red light system, red light traffic system. It's really flexible, but as far as I know, most people are using it for, like, you know, around the house or at their place of business. Some people are trying to tie it into point of sale systems for, like, receipt tracking. That's one of the features we're trying to implement.
Okay. Can you tell us a bit more about the kind of how you got started, how you kind of what, you said that you got started because you, someone was stealing a TV off your porch. Can you tell that story?
Sure. So, I mean, I originally was interested because I was like, wow, this is super cool. Like, I had just gotten into Linux at the time. And I was like, holy crap, this is amazing, you know? So it was just very interesting for me early on. So I deployed it around the house, and eventually, you know, like, you know, this is cool. But then eventually someone stole a TV off my front porch, and it, you know, detected that. It was a cheap TV. It didn't matter. But I was like, oh, you know, neat. But that was just as a user. I really didn't like the front end, the way it looked. So I actually got involved, like, submitting code by rewriting the front end. But it was really just skinning the current front end. Whereas now I'm actually working on a complete rewrite in CakePHP. There it is.
It looks like, yeah, we have the video of...
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah, but it was neat because when the police showed up, like, I wasn't worried about the TV. I just wanted to report it. Mm-hmm. So they were like, you know, we have no idea. I was like, hold on, you know, I've got this video. They were like, and as you can see in a few seconds, he puts his hand on the window. And they were able to go and get a fingerprint off of that. And they got, you know, a good face shot. And they were like, well, this is the, you know, fastest case we've ever had. So I handed them a disc with the video, and that was that.
Were they able to catch the guy based on the video?
Yeah, they did. I never had to go to trial for it or anything. I don't remember what the outcome of that was, but they definitely called him, and he definitely had to, you know, face justice, whatever that was.
Can you talk a bit more about the you said you had built a traffic cam project using ZoneMinder. Can you speak a bit about that?
Yeah, a couple of years back, I was working at a red light enforcement company, and they had these very expensive commercial, basically the systems that catch people running red lights. So I was like, whatever. They weren't happy with their system, so I was working on a system with off-the-shelf hardware. That detected when people actually ran the light. And when they ran the light, I was able to send a signal to ZoneMinder to start recording. So all the backend work was in with ZoneMinder. I mentioned earlier that you can send kind of like a post to the ZoneMinder server on a listening socket and tell it to start recording certain monitors. So that's how I determined which monitor to record which lane of traffic. And you could feed like the... whatever information, I was able to overlay the video with how fast the traffic was, how fast the person was going in the lane, that kind of stuff.
Do you know if it's... That was a couple... No, sorry, go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
I was going to ask if it was still actively being used, the project that you put together.
No, that company actually went bankrupt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then I had to move on to a different job. Yeah, it was fun just because I got to work with a lot of, you know, off-the-shelf stuff and integrate ZoneMinder. Yeah, that was fun.
With that project, how was the speed figured out? Like, was it using some external hardware or was it something else?
Yep. So what I had were basically relay boards that of which they had sensors in the ground. And the relay boards would continuously pull, and as a car went over the two different sensors in the ground, I could calculate the speed based on how long it took them to go between those two sensors. And then with that, I was able to take that and send that data in a post to ZoneMinder's listening socket and tell it to start recording.
Okay. What's the kind of what future features and in what direction do you see ZoneMinder going in?
So the biggest thing we're working on right now is a rewrite of the complete rewrite of the front end. Previously, ZoneMinder, well, currently ZoneMinder has a way of reskinning or theming the front end. But I basically tore everything out in the front end, the entire web directory, and blew it away and started from scratch. You know, I had some familiarity with PHP. I've used it a lot before, but on smaller things. But it wasn't until I was listening to one of the Floss Weekly podcasts where they had the Cake PHP team on, and I was like, huh, maybe I should use a framework. And I didn't really have any experience with it, but man, I was able to get some rapid development done. And now it's looking pretty good. So the 2.0 release is going to include a new front end as well as better support for H.264 streams. And currently ZoneMinder records to JPEGs. So an event consists of a ton of JPEGs that we then stitch together and display to you. The rewrite will be storing in video files. So then you can play them back through the web UI in a HTML5 video tag. So we don't need any back-end native support. Or we do need native support. We don't need any of the back-end code that we're currently using.
It's pretty amazing that you were listening to a Floss Weekly show to get inspiration for using Cake PHP. Have you been a long-time Floss Weekly listener?
On and off. Listening to it on the drive to work with a number of other podcasts. So it was, in my queue. And I was like, looking through the list before my morning commute, and I saw Cake PHP. I was like, that could be relevant. I was like looking at Smarty, templating language or something, and it wasn't going well. So then Cake PHP came out. I was like, well, that sounds exactly what I need. So I gave that a shot, and it's what we're using now, and we're seeing a lot of interest.
And you said you got started with Linux fairly early on. Are you working on any sort of other open source projects besides ZoneMinder?
Early on I was working on, it started with moving a user to the DSpam project, which is an open source spam filtering project, kind of like Spam Assassin, but more so it focuses on like machine learning and Bayesian technologies. And back when it was being developed, I was a user, one of the big users, and I just submitted a few patches. I was very active on the mailing list and the IRC channels. And I guess that's the project that actually got me started in like community involvement in Linux, because when I was trying to get help originally, I was a very, very new Linux user. I didn't know anything. I was like compiling software. It wants me to load a library. What the heck's a library? And nobody was helping. It was very hard to get help. So kind of my goal moving forward has always been to help people and try to give back a little bit, because I know how hard it is to get started.
That's admirable, and it's part of the potluck mentality. And you bring a little and you take a little, and it seems to work all the way around. And what are some of the other projects you're also working on?
Really, ZoneMinder and DSpam are the two open source projects that I've actually contributed to and worked on. DSpam, not so much lately. It's kind of fallen off the face of the earth.
What language is DSpam in?
I guess DSpam was written in C with a PHP front end. That sounds about right. ZoneMinder is written in C++ with a lot of Perl and a lot of PHP on the front end.
And those languages were already chosen by the time you took the project over, but if you had to start over again, would it be those languages again?
We actually talked about this recently in regards to ZoneMinder. And we're pretty happy with what we have. We have the C++ where we want it when we care about performance and stability a little more. We have the Perl where we want it when we care about, a little more rapid development and flexibility. And I was thinking, writing the front end in Ruby on Rails or something, because at the time I was pretty new to all of it. But PHP has been working very well. I think we're pretty happy with the languages we have. And more importantly, we have people contributing, which means, we're using languages that people know how to write in.
Yeah, that definitely helps too. You mentioned an IRC channel for ZoneMinder. Is it pretty well staffed, or will I go in there and find that it's crickets dead every once in a while?
It's pretty well staffed. We have people in different time zones in there. Myself, Eastern Time, myself, I'm in there all day. But that's probably the best way to get help fastest, and you're definitely going to receive a response.
Cool. Do you also have a mailing list so I can forward questions there if something doesn't work?
That's in the pipeline. Kind of trying to get a little more control over the ZoneMinder domain, so I can kind of do some of those things. But right now, the best way to kind of submit an issue is on GitHub. Mm-hmm. It's got a really tight integration with commits and with our bug tracker that, sorry, our continuous integration server that we just stood up. So that's a good way to submit bugs. But just for general help, stop by IRC, and we're definitely there to help you.
Ah, continuous integration. Do you guys have test suites, and how much of the code do they actually cover?
No.
That's the normal answer.
What I mean by that is I'd been interested in setting up a CI server for quite some time, and I wanted basically a way of standing up an entire environment for every build. So I was going to have to write that and like stand up ELXC containers or something. And then I heard about Travis CI, and I was like, wow, great. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. And I had a CI server running up in about a half an hour. So now that's pretty tightly integrated. It compiles FFmpeg from source, installs those libraries, compiles ZoneMinder from source, sets up the database. So that's pretty working pretty well. We actually caught a few pull requests that would have broken the build, and we didn't improve those until they were fixed recently. Soon I'm going to be adding in tests for the front end, so it'll add some default monitors to the database, launch a web UI and take screenshots and do all that stuff. So it's, work in progress.
Yeah, I was going to think this is probably pretty hard to test because you've got, and you want things that suck down live cameras, and you have to simulate those live cameras somehow. I imagine you do it with, pre-played or pre-canned video, and then make sure it always finds the same zone detection.
Well, I think mostly what I'm interested in is being able to add a monitor, one that I've added before, and make sure that the analysis daemons don't crash, for example, to kind of make sure the code's working. You're right. It would be very hard to like compare detection zones and, what it finds from there. So, I'm starting a little bit smaller.
Yeah. Now, actually, we haven't had Travis on the show because it's not really open source, but it helps open source projects out. Do you want to talk a little bit more about what it does for you to help you do all this testing?
Yeah, it's great. So basically you create a Travis CI account and you kind of give it access to your GitHub account, and then you add a .travis.yaml file to the root of your project, and preferably in every branch, so you can do specific things per branch. But let's just say your master branch right now. Mm-hmm. And then for every commit or pull to your project, it will spin up a virtual private server just for your project and follow the build steps in your YAML file. It supports a ton of languages. We use C++ and Make and those things, so it can do that. You can have pre-build, post-build, commit hooks, or a hook. So, like, post-build, if it's successful, I have it setting up the database. My pre-hooks are installing FFmpeg from source and building that. And it's just, it's working really good. I don't know how we got by for so long without it.
And this is free, isn't it, for open source stuff?
It is. It looks like they are going to try to make some money off of it by supporting private repositories, but for right now it's free for open source repositories, or for open repositories in GitHub. And literally I had a CI server up in about 30 minutes building our code. And it's even cooler because the pull requests for each commit in there, it builds each individual commit, and then it'll change the text of the pull request and say, caution, should not merge, build failed. So it's like, nice.
Ah, cool. And this is travisci.org, if I think I remember right.
Yeah, that's correct. It might be travis-ci.org.
Okay. Well, Google for Travis CI. I'm sure you'll find it there. So good. Glad we got a description of that finally, because I actually stumbled across it about a year ago, and I thought this was really, really cool. We'll have to talk about it someday, and thank you for bringing that up. So what's on the most immediate – I know Gareth asked this, but I want to hear it again so I can make more questions about it. What's on the immediate roadmap? What's the biggest feature that you're still seeing that's missing, and what kind of – people do you need to help flesh that out?
I'd say the biggest feature we're working on right now is the new front end. The back end is pretty stable and it does what it's supposed to do. Has room for improvement. Like, we would love to get some video recording happening instead of JPEG snapshot recording, which we actually have working right now in one of our developers' forks. So that's in the pipeline, and that'll be very exciting. We could really use some more C++ programmers and people that are good with PHP particularly CakePHP and the convention and framework that that fits in. We'd really like to get a new logo, so someone that's good with graphic design would be great. And even just people that are willing to write documentation, because, goodness, there's a lot of documentation that's out of date, and I'm trying to get a hold on that. We want to rewrite the website itself to make it a little more attractive. So people that are good with that. Right now we're using Twitter Bootstrap to kind of get up and running a little quicker. Mm-hmm. Basically, we can use any kind of help that's out there.
And what about internationalization? Have you had requests for translating this from English?
Yep. The Current Zone Minder front end supports that exactly. One of the options you set is which locale you're in, and it translates it in the back end. I'll need a lot of help with that on the new front end in CakePHP because all the old back end stuff is going away. But pretty recently, we actually had a guy submit something like 20 pull requests with, localization changes. So it's very cool. But yeah, it supports currently in whole, I don't know how many languages, but quite a few.
Cool. And we're almost out of time. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to make sure our audience is aware of about ZoneMinder?
Just that it's being supported again. Trying to keep it open, and if there's a feature you want or a bug that you want fixed, or you looked at it previously and you couldn't get help, check it out again because we're working really hard on it.
And what sort of conferences are in this space that you might give an appearance of ZoneMinder at or give a talk about? I'm not familiar with the monitoring environment, like obviously you are. So, are there national, international conferences that ZoneMinder might make an appearance at?
Not that I know of. I know it's been featured in some local Linux users groups, mm-hmm. but I'm not aware of any like conferences, that larger projects are having.
Well, I'm thinking more in terms of what's in the security camera space. So you'd be sitting alongside some of the commercial offerings.
Ah, okay. Honestly, I'm not familiar with any.
Okay. Just checking, because I was thinking maybe, this would be great if you had like your booth set up there where you've got, ZoneMinder is free, and then they've got their big, really yep. expensive system, so you could go, look at all the things they can do for free.
Well, that's a big thing I'm working on the front end. I mean, it's a lot of it's all about appearance. It's very stable on the back, but I want to make the front end usable for a business owner, for someone just to take it and run with it. And that's kind of my goal on the front end. So as soon as we're there, I think we'll get a lot more of the support where you see it competing with more commercial projects. Right now, the front end is very not user-friendly, so I've really got to fix that to just make it more widely adopted.
Mm-hmm. Is this just a labor of love for you, or do you want to make money off this someday?
Right now, it's a labor of love. I mean, I've been working very hard on this project, and I guess I'm working on this more than I've ever worked on anything. Really enjoy it. I like being involved. I like giving back. Mm-hmm. Don't really know how I would commercialize it. Or maybe a software as a service kind of thing. But right now, that's not even in scope.
Okay. You mean you could always offer a commercialized version of it? I mean, apparently somebody else already did. So you might as well do something similar to that, have some sort of, supported level or... And I hate to say this, I'm glad Simon Phipps isn't here, but maybe a freemium model where you have some additional features that are available only in the commercial model.
Yeah, I mean, we've run a few things by, but right now we're just kind of scrambling to get the project supported and running again. That's kind mm-hmm. of been, not even thought about.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure that I figured out where you're heading with this, so that sounds great. I have two questions I always have to ask every guest. I already know the first one because you wrote it in your rundown that you sent me. What's your favorite programming language?
Visual Basic.
No,
I mean Perl. I love Perl.
Perl, yay, Perl. One from my side. Yay, finally.
Yeah,
when did you start using Perl?
I got the modern Perl book on my desk. Cool. Basically, about 9 years ago when I started with Linux. I've had to use Python a few times and other languages, but I keep going back to Perl.
Cool. That's great. And then what's your favorite text editor?
Vim, all the way.
Yeah, okay. One out of two ain't bad, I guess.
Get one out of two.
That's great. Well, I'm sure a lot more people now are aware of what ZoneMinder has available to them by listening to this show. Thank you for coming on the show and talking to us about ZoneMinder.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Very cool. That was Kyle Johnson, the head honcho for ZoneMinder, longtime ZoneMinder user, now the current project lead, and doing it so far as a labor of love, but who knows? Eventually things might change. Gareth, what do you think?
I'm glad that the project is still continuing. I mean, like Kyle had said, it seemed to have kind of gone dormant for a few years, but I'm glad that someone has kind of taken the reins and is bringing it up to speed. So it's good to see.
Yeah, definitely. This is really cool. And it's such a niche product. I mean, if you don't have webcams that need monitoring, obviously you might not run across this. It's not sort of a general purpose thing, but it sounds like, you know, if this is the kind of thing that I need to do, and this is really like the most important and biggest project in this area, and it doesn't sound like it's all that hard to install and is really flexible. So I think, again, if this is the thing for you, and he even was able to catch the guy that stole his TV. Didn't look like a fairly new TV, but maybe it was important to him probably that he did that. I liked it. I hadn't heard that part of the story where the guy actually touched the window, so they got a fingerprint. That was lucky. That was probably pretty smart.
Yeah, no, that's really good that they were able to use that video to capture it. So that's a good use case story for that project.
Absolutely. I don't know how many other open source projects we've talked about over the years that have been used in actually catching a criminal. So that's pretty smart.
I'd say it's very niche, very niche. Crime-fighting open source.
And what a great idea to just be willing to contribute like that and say, you know, I've been a user of this thing for a long time and I see that it's not going anywhere and I'll just take it over and rather than forking it. That's admirable. That really is admirable. And who knows how many other dormant projects are out there that you've been a user of. I would actually challenge this to our audience here, you know, that are sitting dormant and you know, maybe the right thing to do is to say, hey, you know, can I do it?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's also good that the original author was humble enough to let someone else kind of take the reins of the project. So that's good to see too.
Absolutely, cooperative and cooperative. Speaking of cooperative projects, we have a number on the upcoming schedule here. We've got next week, we've got Yasi, I don't know how to pronounce this yet. I'll have to ask him when we bring him on. This is a search engine for either intranet or internet. So it's sort of imagine it as a local Google where you can crawl your own machines that are internal, don't want to be exposed to the internet, and get a search engine available for that. But it's also good for internet. Apparently, you can have peering machines that cooperate to help do the crawl. I mean, obviously, Google has zillions of machines to go do that. Well, we don't individually have zillions of machines, but if we want to do our own crawl for maybe a particular topic area or something like medicine or something, then we can do that. So we'll talk more about that when we bring them on next week. Coming up right after that is Wireshark. This is the Wire Protocol Analyzer. Basically, Wire Protocol is everything that goes over like a TCP/IP connection or also radio connections. That HTTP or SMTP or whatever, all the different protocols that we use. This is the number one analysis tool for that, and it's really versatile. It's been around for a really long time. You might know it better as the earlier name it had was, I think, was Ethereal. Yeah, Ethereal. They had to change that because of some trademark conflict. We can ask about that when they bring him on. After that, we've got the BeagleBoard, which is a single board computer, similar to the Arduino project we had on, but also up and coming, and it got some good flexibility there. We'll have Aaron Newcomb on that week because he's really good at these little embedded projects and talking about those. Just added to the schedule, we have QGIS, whatever it is. It's open source, obviously, desktop geographic information system. It's the kind of thing you can use to say, I want to pop up a display of the 50 states, and here's the activity we have on sales or something in each of the states. All open source stuff, some mapping software for I was going to say Aardvark. What the hell is the thing? What's Android? Not Aardvark. It's morning, man. It's still morning. Okay, the Android. The maps have been written for that, and it's portable also to OS X and Linux and Windows and things like that. Also just added to the schedule, a lot of you actually may be hearing my voice on this software. It's GPodder. It's a podcast manager. So sort of a competitive with iTunes in the sense of being able to download your podcasts, play them for you and things like that. And we're finally going to bring on the lead of that project. And then wrapping up the schedule so far scheduled is Crossroads, which is a fork of Zero MQ. We've had Zero MQ on the project or on the podcast a while back, but we're going to bring on a fork of that project and get his reasonings for that and the things he's doing that Zero MQ isn't doing. We're still continuing to fill in the last little bit of Q4. If you go to twit.tv/floss, you'll find our great spreadsheet that talks all about that. If you have a project that's not on that list, you can do like the leaders of these projects did and email me directly, merlin@stonehenge.com. If you're a fan of a project, please write the project leader and have them email me. That has continued to work pretty successful for getting a good variety of projects on the show, so I'm going to just keep doing it that way because it makes me the laziest I possibly can be. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+. We also have a Twitter account, Floss Weekly. Everything that's posted to the Google+ also gets a tweet, and that links back to the Google+. There I announce the new shows. I also announce the upcoming show, so you can have some sense of whether you want to tune in or not. We do have a live display of this show at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. And it's on live.twit.tv, and there's also a chat room there. We did take a couple questions from the chat room here. Did we? Actually, yeah, I think we did. I might have. Anyway, doesn't matter. It's over with now. You can follow me on Google Plus as Randall L. Schwartz. I post about 6 or 7 things a day there. And then you can also follow me on Merlin on Twitter. All right, that's probably enough pitching for me. I bet I know what you're going to pitch this time again.
Yeah, it's my standard pitch. It's a new pitch. The Scale call for papers is now officially open. So if anyone is interested in speaking about any topic related to free and open source software, SoCalLinuxExpo.org has the link to the call for papers. So the show will be happening February 2014, February 21st through the 23rd in warm, sunny Los Angeles, California. So many people around the country, it's cold and chilly in February, but it's warm and sunny in California at that time. So, definitely come out and speak or submit to speak, and maybe we'll pick you, and then you'll get to come out and enjoy the sunshine.
Cool. Yeah. And I'll be submitting, at least to cover it as press again, but maybe I'll give a talk or two. I've got a couple of things I haven't, given at conferences recently, like maybe my Half-Life with Pearl talk or something that went over really well at OSCON, and I actually was just checking my schedule. I'm actually not on a cruise that weekend for a change, so I will definitely be putting my name in the ring for that. And yes, I've been to a few in the past. They're really fun. It's a real sort of unlike something like OSCON, which just gets to be so huge that you can't really get around to everything. You know, Scale's getting a little bigger now, but it still has a sort of small group feeling. You really can get to a lot of the interesting tracks and not be conflicted too often with, oh God, I got to go to one of 9 things right now. So I really like it. And definitely, yeah, it's got a great little feel. And you also have, you're going to have some, the first day is going to be like, you know, special things like, I know, what would we have? Some like DevOps Day, things like that. Are you going to have some of those again?
Yeah, we'll have the DevOps Day and I'm sure the various configuration management training sessions that we had last year will be back again, as well as our community events, our Postgres, our MySQL, our Ubuntu Day, Fedora Day. So yeah, those will all return on the Friday before the main event.
Cool, and it's also affordable, unlike OSCON. So prices vary, but it's really cheap. It's more on the order of YAPSI or something like that in terms of for people in the Perl community. All right, enough on that. We're just about out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and say we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.